Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:06 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is September 26th. And I thought I would kick off and just look at the calendar because over the next several days, there are going to be quite a few fundamental pieces of information that the market is more than likely going to react to. So, in here today, for example, we had home sales that were below expectations. And then month over month, it was down 8.7%. And even though it was expected to be down, it was down a lot more than expected. And then consumer confidence also continues to deteriorate, but it's still above 100. Then, when we think about the Dallas Fed services activity, it's down a bit. So, are a bit more than than the last time. So, I think those are parts of the reasons why we've had a weak day today. It might be just worth considering what's coming up. So, over the next couple of days, we're going to have mortgage activity, and I think we're going to have, I think more importantly than that, we're going to have GDP. And the running total for GDP or GDP now, it seems to be rather odd that it's well above 4%, even 5%. And that just does not seem to gel with the wider economy. But if GDP figures come in anywhere approaching what's being reported in GDP now, then I think people would have a justifiable case in thinking that we are overheating. So I think that's obviously something else that is going to put upward pressure on interest rates and sustain some of the fears about continued higher rates for longer. Then I think the thing that most people will be paying particular attention to is the core PCE coming out on Friday, and it is going to certainly be one of the things that is going to move the market because in order for a soft landing to take place, we need to see inflation come back down. Then we need to see unemployment be unaffected. And then for the central banks to be able to then say, well, things aren't that bad after all, and there's no need to have higher interest rates for so long anymore. So we can cut the interest rate, we can make credit more available, and a soft landing can be achieved. Now, that sounds almost Pollyanna-ish and almost too good to be true. But that is certainly the impression that the market has been giving, that people believe that that is the most likely outcome. And that's why valuations are so high and why stock prices have been so robust. So I think with all of that as a background, it's probably a good starting point to start looking at some of those charts. And I think the one that really stands out to me at present is the inversion yield curve spread between the 10-year and the 3-month, because it is now trending higher. This looks completely different to the little steps on the way down from the peak in the middle of 2022. And now it's back above the 200-day moving average as well. Now I feel like a broken record, but I'm just going to repeat it again. There are three phases to an inverted yield curve, and the first one is the initial inversion when people worry about a future recession. The second is when you get a big run-up in prices as people rejoice that the central bank is doing something about inflation. Then you have the third, which is when the central bank is overshot. They have tightened too much. And the long and variable lag between when they start raising rates and when they actually hit the economy all tend to pile up at once. And then you get a disappointing growth figure. You get the threat of deflation, and interest rates start coming down very aggressively, very quickly. And that's your third phase when the yield curve de-inverts. So it's trending higher right now. There's clearly the potential that all this talk about a soft landing is the countermeasure. In other words, that with the more people believe there's going to be a soft landing, the less likely it becomes. And this is the paradox of markets. When people were deeply worried about a recession a year ago, then it made it less likely because it helped to prevent overzealous spending. It helped to bring down some of the inflationary pressures. And then there was also that significant release of oil from the strategic reserve in the USA. So all of that helped to bring some of the inflationary measures down, and most particularly energy prices. Whereas what we have today is a lot on, I think it's a clear consensus that economists now think that a soft landing is the base case. But because everyone is behaving as if it's already occurred, we've seen valuations expand considerably, and that is ensuring that rates will stay higher for longer, or I think perhaps more correctly, they will stay higher until they see that unemployment is not just moving higher but accelerating higher. And I think we should be particularly aware of what that means. What I want to be quite clear in pointing out is that unemployment has hit a new high. Now, it looks like nothing on this chart simply because of that incredible spike that we had in 2020. But let's just take that out. And now what we have instead is a new high. So it's up to 3.8%, and 3.8% is not high in and of itself, but it is the highest value we've had in more than 2 years. So unemployment is trending higher. We have a higher high and we have a higher low. So obviously then there's the potential that it is going to keep going higher. And I think when we talk about the Federal Reserve staying higher for longer, well, they're only going to stay as high as is or stay as high for as long enough as is required to both have unemployment rise enough to curtail spending to and then also to mitigate some of the inflationary pressures. So I think the most important thing to remember is that every time they have tried quantitative tightening, it has resulted in deflationary forces. And I don't see any reason to expect that this occasion will not be the same. But we're not there yet. And for the moment, at least, we have a dollar that is rallying in really quite a dynamic fashion. And it was up again in here today. So we've had consecutive weeks on the upside now. And this is a really robust process of breaking the downtrend. Now, let's just remind ourselves that the low was in July. Now let's just contrast that with the S&P 500. So when we think about stock markets, they are pulling back, and that first downside key reversal, right at the peak, was right at the end of July. Then let's also think about the bond market. I'm just going to take the 10-year future as an example, and we can see as well that it has been trending clearly downwards, but it took another leg downwards right from the middle of July onwards. So what we have clear evidence here of is that both stocks and bonds are falling together. And this was also clearly evident in at 2022. And that is very representative of cash being raised. Then the reason that the 10-year minus 3-month is advancing so quickly is because that cash that is coming out of both bonds and equities is, in fact, being reinvested into money market funds and very short-dated treasuries. So that's suppressing yields at the at the short end of the curve, whereas at the same time, yields at the long end of the curve continue to advance. And this is obviously problematic. This continued breakout in the 10-year yield, now establishing itself above 4.5%, is a obviously a problematic event. because not only does it increase the premium above which stocks have to perform in order to become attractive, but it also means that there's going to be additional borrowing costs. And I think that this is one of the primary factors behind this downdraft. Now, let's just zoom in on the NASDAQ 100. The index has broken down to a new reaction low in here today, and that followed the lower rally high put in at the beginning of the month. So we have a lower high and a lower low. This is now trending downwards, and it is in the process of unwinding the short-term overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. But if we continue to see interest rates moving higher and inflation remaining stubbornly high as well, then I think the base case has to be that we're going to see a further unwinding of this very strong move up from the lows in October of last year. And we could easily come back down into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Then I think it's also rather interesting to pay attention to the advanced decline line for the NYSE. So it's now right back in the region of the 200-day moving average. And I think this is one of the most useful indicators of whether we're in a secular bull market or not. Because in big secular bull markets, the advanced decline line does not come back down through the 1,000-day. And every time it comes back into the region of the 200-day moving average, it has been a buying opportunity. And that was also the case after the pullback we saw in 2015. Now, let's also remind ourselves what happened in 2015 and 16, because it was the aegis of the QE3. So we did have a big infusion of new liquidity that helped to sustain the bull market subsequently. And without it, I think it is quite likely that we would have had a longer and lengthier process of consolidation. Of course, what that also helps to raise is the big question, whether we've had this big secular bull market over the last 15 years because of a massive productivity gain, or how much of it was really predicated on access to abundant, cheap credit indefinitely. And I think it's an awfully big question. And I think when we look then at the Dow Gold ratio, well, we get a graphic example of what it looks like. Because when I was originally looking at this ratio 10 years ago, it looked like it bottomed in 2011. And that was a really clear sign that we were going to be moving into a new big bull market for equities. And if it had been anything like we'd seen in the past, then it would have been reasonable to anticipate that the stock market would have outperformed gold for the lengthy medium term, I think more correctly, the long term. And we had these really quite consistent intervals of time between major peaks. So if the next peak had been similar to the previous two, the next we should have anticipated that a peak would have been somewhere out in 2034 to 35, and substantially higher than the one put in the late 1990s. But that cyclicality was broken in 2019. And we had this really profound decline. So there are two ways of thinking about it. The first is that the Dow Jones is no longer representative of the stock market. And that there, I think there's some relevance to that, because it's mostly a blue chip index, and all of the performance over the last decade has been from a very small number of tech companies. Alternatively, the measure of monetary value from gold might not be as relevant now as it was in the 1960s. And there is some relevance to that as well. But at least gold is still a monetary metal, and the Dow Jones is still an index of big companies, and several of the largest companies are also components of the Dow Jones. But if we simply take the ratio at just as the signal that it's giving us, it's that there should be a significant doubt about whether we're going to persist in the secular bull market that really started to get going in 2011. And if that's the case, well, are we then going to move into a much more volatile period? Well, I think it's a bit too early to have a concrete decision about that. But certainly with the less consistent trend on the advanced decline line, with valuations such as they are on Wall Street, and particularly for the largest companies, and with interest rates rising and global liquidity conditions tightening, and the total assets of central banks continuing to decline, then I think what we have to at least be open to is the clear potential that asset prices, whether for bonds or equities, are going to continue to contract. And then at the same time, we continue to see how robust oil prices have been on the upside. The West Texas Intermediate was up 90 cents in here today. It's closing above the $90 area for the first time in a while. And Brent crude is up to $94. Now, this chart here of these total assets of central banks is down to $27.6 trillion. And right at the beginning of 2022, it was closer to 33. So we've seen a really significant contraction in the volume of cash that's outstanding. Now, I've written quite a bit about the leveraged loan market in Comment of the Day today. And they have very successfully stretched maturities out beyond 2024. So we don't have the maturity wall for leveraged loans. And that's very significant. If there is one compelling, I think, factor that could help to support the view that we could have a soft landing or that a recession will not be too onerous, it's that successful stretching of maturities in leveraged loans. However, we do not know how sensitive these business models are to a decline in consumer spending, because we haven't had one in quite a long time. Now let's think about how those large fangman companies are exposed to the role of the consumer. So Meta does not charge consumers up front, but they are completely reliant on selling advertising, and advertising budgets are clearly dependent on the health of a business and their ability to continue to favor marketing. In a recession, companies do continue to market. So Meta has paused, and we've had a good-sized pullback over the last 6 or 7 weeks and then a rebound. So I think we are at least going to see some pause of consolidation here. Now let's contrast that with Apple. So is completely dependent on the health of the consumer. And they need people to be able to make the payments on their phones. They need people to be able to buy their watches and buy their iPads and buy their Macs. And that is 100% dependent on the consumer. And the share is now right in the region of the 200-day moving average and potentially breaking down out of this short-term range. If it breaks below 170, the next area of potential support is the lower side of the range, which now coincides with the 1,000-day moving average. We have not seen Apple trade below the 1,000-day moving average, and it is still an enormously attractive company and has a very loyal fan base. But it is quite capable of pulling back to the 1,000-day moving average. Then let's think about Amazon, because it is also heavily dependent both upon the consumer with its marketplace, although it is currently being sued on antitrust measures, and I think that there is weight to those arguments. And then it is also dependent on its Amazon Web Services division, which is basically database space. but that database space is heavily reliant on smaller companies and the health of smaller companies and smaller companies' businesses being sustained and growing. And in a recessionary environment, that is unlikely to be as robust. The share pulled back violently last week and is extending that decline in here this week. It is looking like a short-term type 2 top formation, massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So I think the benefit of the doubt can continue to be given to the downside in the medium term. And then let's think about Microsoft. So Microsoft is also heavily dependent on consumers, but particularly dependent on companies. And the share is now right back in the region of the 200-day moving average, and that is despite the fact that it had a major product launch in the last couple of days where it really laid out a whole range of new AI-related products and wasn't rewarded for that at all by investors. In fact, I think most of it was already priced in. So now it is also back in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is an important area where it needs to find support. Then we have Nvidia, and that share has gone up faster than just about anything else in the last year. But there's certainly a loss of momentum. We have failed upside breaks. It is now back in the region of the short-term sequence of higher reaction lows. So I've been thinking about shorting Nvidia. It's just exceptionally expensive to do so. But the chart does not look like a compelling buy either. And we're talking about a company that has a price-to-sales ratio of 30 and then a PE still of 39. That is despite the massive bump in sales that we've had over the last year. So there's an incredible amount of good news already priced into Nvidia's share price. And the longer we see prices, or I guess inflationary pressures remaining robust, then the greater the downward pressure is going to come to bear on some of these highly valued companies. Now, I don't think that these companies are necessarily going to go bust, but they could easily come back into a more reasonable valuation metric. And then I think it is important to highlight that those oil prices are still very high and moving higher. And I think this is eerily similar to the kind of condition we had before 2008, where stock markets had begun to lose momentum. And then banking stocks were really underperforming. And then oil prices were marching higher. And that was despite the fact that the wider stock market was rolling over. And I think it's important to just highlight that banking sectors are not doing well. And they did roll over again, and they are still trending downwards. So I think there is obviously risk in this market. And commodities, it's not just oil, do remain quite steady. So orange juice, for example, was up $10 today to a new high. Then feeder cattle have really responded to the decline, or to the first, the big run-up was in response to the big run-up in grain prices a year ago. So they fed fewer cattle. So there was a shortage. Now grain prices have moderated significantly, and with a lag, we're starting to see some of these feeder cattle prices beginning to come back down. And then rough rice has been particularly volatile on the futures market. So local markets in Asia have been quite steady, but at US prices, the futures price at least, is still holding a sequence of higher reaction lows. So I think we're certainly in a risk-off environment. And the continued strength of the dollar is putting downward pressure on gold. But it's supporting gold in several other currencies. So when we look at gold in pounds, then the weakness of the pound has been a really significant support. But even there, gold was a little weaker in here today. In a risk-off environment, gold will not be immune, but what it often tends to be is one of the first to rebound. And I suspect that that will also be the case on this occasion. And then when we think about what's going on in China, the Shanghai Property Index made a new low yesterday, and no new measures were announced today, so it continued to decline in here today. The bigger question here is really how much of focus has the Chinese administration put on political imperatives rather than supporting the property market? And so far, at least, its politics is winning out. But this is another potential wild card, where there is obviously the potential that continued weakness in China is going to feed through into weakness in the industrial resources, and then subsequently have a deflationary effect on the wider economy globally. I remain very much of the view that we will have a deflationary shock at some point next year, and that when we do start to see deflation becoming more of a factor, probably in 2024, then we're going to see a big rally in bonds. But there's no evidence of it just yet, and certainly the shorts are in total control at present. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.